Welcome to the Wicked Wallflowers Club. I'm Jenny Nordback.
And I'm Sarah Hawley. And we are here with author Jen DeLuca. We talk about her debut novel, Well Met, and share some Renaissance Fair stories. And as a special treat this week, we are also joined by Melody Carlisle from Heaving Bosoms. So without further ado, here is our interview with Jen DeLuca.
We are joined today by Jen DeLuca. And we've been stalking Jen online ever since we found out she has written a Ren Fair romance. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where like someone posts it and you're like, how have I not had this in my life yet? I need it immediately.
This is exactly tailored to my interests. Well, that was kind of when I was writing it. I was sort of like, someone had to have done this already, right? And they hadn't. So I was kind of surprised and I kept writing. I'm like, this has to have been a thing. And I found a couple of books here and there, but they were mostly in the like a few years back. And there wasn't anything really current using that kind of theme. And it was just, it's such a great nerdy niche kind of a thing that I was really, like I said, kind of shocked that no one had really done it before. So I was really excited to just sort of like, well, let's see what happens.
It was even one of those funny things where like, I think someone posted it, like you probably posted when you first signed the deal on Twitter or something and it came across my feed and I like couldn't remember who the author and book were. So I had to do the like, someone tell me who this author is. And then I think it was like Kate Claiborne or someone was oh, it's Jen.
She's one of my biggest cheerleaders. I adore her. Aww. She's a wonderful human.
And we are also joined this morning by the lovely Melody Carlisle from Heaving Bosoms, because why the hell not?
Exactly.
It's like, it's a Ren Fair romance and you're going to love it.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
So what was your, like, how did you come to romance and then how did that turn to starting to write romance?
Well, I think like probably just about everybody else, I, you know, found my mom's romance novels, you know, as a kid, just sort of my mother was a very big reader and she started me reading not romance novels at a very early age, but just started me reading in general. Mm-hmm. And so reading was always something that was very big in my house. I remember one time a boyfriend and when I was a teenager came over and like literally like we were all just sort of sitting around reading, like me and my mom and my dad, like just it's just a very big book family, which is pretty cool. But so I probably, you know, found my mom's paperback romances like a lot of us do when you're a little too young to really be reading them. But and I remember one of the big things I remember about getting into romance was I grew up in Virginia, but I went to school in Rhode Island for a while. And I would take these long 12-hour train rides home from, you know, New England back down to Virginia. And I would just go to the bookstore and I would pick up just a couple of, you know, those great, you know, trashy looking romance, you know, with the covers back. And this would be back in like the early 90s when they had those really great elaborate covers, you know.
Oh, I missed those covers.
Yeah. I mean,
post them now and I'm like, yes, there's fire and their clothes are falling off.
Right. And there's just all kind of, you know, wind is coming from all different directions. And yes. Nature does
someone's
not happen.
There's like a random wolf or a lightning bolt or just like shit where you're like,
Yeah. Or a horse up on its back feet.
With waterfalls. And it was just nuts. But so I would read these novels on the train and then I would always end up sitting next to a nun and I'd be trying to hide the cover.
Oh my gosh. I was on the subway this morning coming in to Manhattan and I was sitting next to a woman and she was reading the Bible on her phone and I was reading like his throbbing cock just like holding the phone
just
close,
angle this away from that person so that was it's just sort of always been something that I've liked to read and it's always sort of been my escape. You know, then like later on, I've been in book clubs and we always read these, you know, important books about, you know, that are always depressing about World War II or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go home and read my vampire romance novel that's on my nightstand because that's a lot more fun after a long day of work than reading about people dying, you know, 60, 80 years ago.
Yes.
So, agreed. You know, and when you work a long day at work, you want to just have that escape and something that makes you happy. And I just have always, I've come over the past few years before I started writing it just to love romance for that, where you know what you're going to get and you know that the ride might be bumpy, but you know those people are going to end up happy and you just have that safe promise while you're reading it. And it just feels really good to have. So then I think from there, I honestly don't even remember how I started writing it. I think I just had some ideas. I started probably just like writing down for NaNoWriMo where I was like, oh, I'll just write a fun kissing book. And then you find out it's not that easy. Like a lot of people
How many people have trudged into that? Like, it's fine. Yeah. I read these. I can write it.
And it's like, super easy. No, it's really not super easy. But and then I just realized that was, again, just like I like reading it. I like writing it. It's just, I think what I like about it is you have that HEA constraint. You have to have them end up happily. You know exactly how they end the book. And you know, you kind of know that formula, especially when you're writing tropes, you know, that you have to follow, but it's almost like a puzzle. Like, how can I make this new and how can I make this unique and my own spin on it and that kind of thing. So it's, to me, that's exciting.
So tell us the setup for Well Met.
Well Met is about a woman who comes to a small town and she gets kind of roped into volunteering for a small town Renaissance festival. And she thinks, oh, it'll be fine. She's here for the summer. She's helping take care of her sister who's been in a bad car accident. So she's kind of being a caretaker. She's got a niece who's a teenager, you know, needs to run back and forth to different things. And the niece is the one who wants to participate in the Renaissance Fair, and she has to have an adult do it with her. So Emily, the main character, gets roped into doing it because the sister's, you know, incapacitated. So she just thinks, oh, sure, it'll be fine. It'll be, you know, who cares, whatever. I'm here for the summer. And she has this very kind of blasé attitude about it, and which clashes very, what's the word I'm looking for? Clashes very strongly with the man who's running the Renaissance Festival, who is a very kind of closed off, buttoned down, kind of rule following kind of guy. And
yeah. All of us just like,
So there's a little kind of buttoned down guy that's like, I would like to arrange a joust. Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, he runs it and he's very, you know, rules driven, schedule, you know, kind of guy. And so she comes in and she's like, well, why don't we do this with it? And he's like, no, no, that's not what we do. And so she's like, okay, fine, you're a dick, whatever. And so everything that she kind of tries, whenever she sort of has this lighthearted attitude about things, he's kind of always kind of glaring at her, and she's just like, oh my God, what an asshole. So then, you know, we get to the first day of the actual Renaissance Fair, and she's in her tavern wench outfit, and she's got her boobs hiked up to here, and suddenly she sees, you know, Simon, the button-down, rules-driven, stern guy, and suddenly he's a pirate in leather pants.
Oh,
and
my.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Who's
the
suddenly,
best of all worlds.
You said leather, and I saw Jenny.
Suddenly he's flirting with her, and she doesn't know what to do with that, and so it becomes a very...
So is he now sort of in character?
Yeah, he's in character, and he's in character as a pirate. And
so as a pirate,
that's
he can...
swarthy man.
Exactly. And so
he can,
there's
like,
this...
let that side of himself out a little bit more.
Exactly, exactly. That's the kind of the thing that he's kind of going through. He's got, you know, he's got his backstory and everything. And I don't know how much I want to go into that, but you know, he's got his little tragic backstory, and you sort of learn why he is the way he is. I saw a couple of bloggers like sort of mention like a little bit of a Pride and Prejudice kind of thing, which I think is fair because it's a single POV. It's all her POV. Mm-hmm. So you know, you meet him through her eyes, and then she learns about him and learns why he's the way he is. But yeah, there's sort of that showmance thing kind of happening where the characters are bickering and bantering and flirting. And then at the end of the day, he becomes a dick again. And she's like just thrown for a 180. And then it kind of becomes, you know, what's real, what's in costume, what's not out of costume. You know, they're kissing as characters. But, you know, is this a real kiss? Is this just a show kiss?
Is it a joust kiss?
Joust kiss.
Oh my gosh.
What is your connection to the Ren Faire world? Do you have a background in Ren Faires?
A little bit. I have the very good fortune to live near a Renaissance Fair, a small town Renaissance festival I very much use the setting for the book. And so I went for many, many years as a patron, just watching it kind of grow from a smaller festival and being a little bit bigger every year. And then I spent 2 seasons volunteering with it. So I was a tavern wench with my boobs hiked up to here. And just had a really good time volunteering with it. But I was very, very fascinated just kind of, you know, in the back of my mind, just by how different you feel when you do put on that costume. You know, you put on that corset and your body moves differently. You carry yourself differently. You have these long skirts that are brushing the ground, and you almost feel like you're in a different time. And then you see these people show up and they're in the pirate costumes, and you're like, oh, hi, you know, and you wouldn't, you know, at the grocery store, you wouldn't run into somebody and go, oh, hey, look at that guy. But when they're pirate leather pants, you're like, oh, okay, this is nice. And you react differently to people that you maybe wouldn't necessarily.
Oh, what an interesting perspective. That's really cool.
Yeah. So then, of course, and then I see things through, you know, a romance writer's lens. So I was like, okay, enemies to lovers. Let's, you know, people who don't like each other, but then they're in costume and suddenly, you know, they're kissing. And I just wanted to see what I could do with that. So.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm going to interject with a fun fact because I just remembered it. The state sport of Maryland is jousting because there's so many Renaissance.
That makes sense. That's amazing. Actually.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to share that.
There's a really big one where I grew up in Texas. I think it's called like the Texas Renaissance Festival. And it's got like dedicated land. Like they own the land. It's not like a lot of places. It's like a fairground and they kind of come in and out. Like, so there are like structures and like it's
permanent buildings.
Yeah. And, it's like a big thing. And I think it's only grown like a lot. So, I have a couple of pretty epic Ren Faire stories because I was a shit show as a teenager and was let loose with my shit show friends at the Renaissance Festival. And we went in like full costume. We were theater kids. So rented these costumes from this amazing costume store that was nearby. And like, we did not look 16 at all, but like we were 16. And so I saw my first ever adult male penis at a Renaissance Festival when... not because it wasn't just hanging out, but like I'm 16, we're kind of being giggly, whatever. And we were at like one of the games things, and there was this like smoking hot guy, like shirtless guy in a kilt. Like he looked like a cover model from a romance novel, like abs for days. He had to have been like 35 though. Like this was not a teenager, but like one of the hottest men I've ever seen. And of course we all just like the heads swivel, and the guy who was like doing the games, I think it was like a couple doing the games, were like giving us a hard time over it and whatever. And the guy to me is like, you should go say kilt check to him. And I was like, I was like, I'll do it. And he was like, do you know what that means? And I was like, bro, I'm from Scotland. Like, yes.
Yes.
I know what that means. Like, my little sister did this to my uncle at the wedding. Like,
oh, no.
Like, oh. So, yeah, I know he's not supposed to have anything under it. And it turned into this, like, they were egging me on. And, of course, I was me, but probably more me then.
Totally.
So I was like, fine, I'll do it. Like, and I go marching up to this smoking hot guy. And I'm like, kilt check. And he was like, do it.
Nice.
And I had you do it?
Well, no, and I like my bravado was just like, like I obviously would have been like, fuck
yeah,
you.
Totally.
But 16-year-old Jenny was just like, that was as far as like going up and talking to this guy was as far as this extended for me. Like now I don't know what to do. You've totally called my bluff. And he just sort of did the like kind of cocked eyebrow smirk thing at me, like,
oh my God.
And he goes, do you want me to do it for you? I was like, yes. And that motherfucker hiked his kilt up, and I know, but like he had a magnificent package, and like was just like, kilt check, I'm done, and then like swaggers away, and I was just like,
big swinging dick.
That's nice.
So that, and like he is technically a sex offender
because I didn't know if I should go there.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, a lot of these stories. As I like dug out some pictures and was like, I still look 16. Like, I am clearly... Yeah, so I was like, he exposed himself to a 16-year-old.
To a minor.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so you're a sex offender
or something. Like,
no. Well, yeah. Hopefully. I mean, you don't know, but he didn't check.
He didn't ask.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe he should have asked for ID first. ID. Yeah.
There you go.
It's a good policy. If you're going to expose your penis to someone, you should probably ask for ID.
Probably a good idea.
But yeah, he is a sex offender. So that was my first... When at that same Renaissance Fair, we ended up, I still have these pictures and I'm going to post them when the episode runs, but there were like these Viking guys too, who were just like all over us. Like they were, would not leave us alone, and they were just whatever. And at the time we were like very giggly and excited about it. And again, I've looked back at these pictures and I'm like, these men are like 35-40 and are just clearly, and we're clearly doing the girl thing where you're sort of like smiling, but you're also like, this
leaning
is a
away.
Lot. Yeah. And so like, yeah, those pictures in retrospect are a little uncomfortable to look at. But like 5 years later, when we were like 21, 22, does that math add up? Yeah, we had to have been 21 because we could now legally drink for the first time. We must have been 21. So it was like the first time
game changer.
We could actually drink and like go up and get. Yeah, it was a big deal. And so this same Viking guy in the exact same costume finds us and is like still obsessed.
Did he remember you?
No, but like it was just
apparently
so
he
then,
has a type.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, my best friend that I was there with is this like super tall, white blonde. Like she looks like a Viking. She's like buxom and just like, he was mostly into her. But so we went to the like bonfire, like the kind of cast camps there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's like a drum circle and a bonfire, and I drank like an entire bottle of vodka.
Oh no.
And it almost fell into the fire.
Okay.
Someone had to like, and I got so close to falling into the fire that the sash I was wearing caught on fire.
Oh no.
And someone someone had to put it out. I still have this burned sash. I swore I was going to frame it as like the night I almost died in a bonfire at Renaissance Fair. Yeah, because I was just like trashed. And my friend got like kidnapped by this Viking guy. He like tried to like play out. So he like throws her over his shoulder and like takes her to his tent. We had to be like, this is not happening. For some reason, we're not alarmed by this. And like, it's all in good fun. We were now close enough to him that we were like, is that glitter on your chest? And he had like made himself sparkly. So then we were drunk. So we just start like sort of being like, why do you have glitter? What kind of Viking has glitter? And we were kind of bad to him. But yeah.
He also tried to abduct your friend.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, he kind of deserved it.
Well, and he had been like hitting on us from 16 on. Yeah. And, like,
Playing a long game.
Well, no wonder he tried to make himself a Twilight Viking.
Yeah. Yeah. He was trying to
appeal to the demographic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those are my Ren Faire stories that I can think of / remember. Like, I've been a mess.
I really want to volunteer at a Ren Faire. I was looking, but they require a commitment that wouldn't work with my job. But, like, it's my dream. It's the dream.
Well, but so we went this year, and it was my first time going since I've had kids. And I took my kids. It looks a lot different when you're you've got your kids.
Yeah, going to the kind of the family friendly version of a fair with, you know, with kids and the face painting and the little, you know, the little kid games and the really fun. And you can go and have a family friendly
time. Sure.
And then you can go and have a drinking time. Yeah. You know, the one that I would volunteer. We had the pub crawls and those got pretty dangerous and sometimes involved the paramedics. And
do the pony races where you put your hands behind your back. I don't know why they call them pony races. And then you have a big cup of either beer or cider, and then they pour in either wine or a different cider, and then they are like suck, and you have to chug as fast as possible while they're pouring more into it, they're shouting obscenities at you. So that's what I do every year.
Well, this is like only something Sarah's experienced. Like, no, someone made it up on the spot.
It's like this random man at the side of the road.
I was like, is this at the Renaissance Fair? Yeah. Or is this just like on a random Tuesday night?
No,
it's one
particular, it's the Oubliette at the Renaissance Pleasure Fair.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Ye Old Renaissance Pleasure Fair is what it's called here in LA.
Yeah.
But yeah, do that every time.
Okay.
So what is the, it's a 3-book series, yes?
Two so far, yes.
And so what is coming next?
I'm working on the follow-up, and it's called Well Played, and it's about one of the supporting characters. And it sort of explores like sort of the same, it's the same area of, you know, the same world, but it's just sort of from her perspective. It's more about someone who's never left a small town, and she sort of has that yearning to get out of there, and it's... Yeah, that's what that's. I'm still kind of working. I'm really kind of in the second draft stage of it all. So I'm still, you know, puzzling out a lot of the more intricate plot details. But to me, what I find interesting about small town romance is just how like utopian it can be sometimes. And so I kind of wanted to write about somebody who wanted to get out of there and feels a little trapped there, where you usually like you have that big city girl come into the small town and realize that's where she needs to be. And so I like the idea of somebody like, no, I don't need this. I need to get out of here. And she's trying to figure out how, because she's sort of stuck in a stasis, you know, where you sort of, when you're there for a while, you're like, oh, I'll stay for a couple of years. And then all of a sudden it's 10 years later.
Yeah. Sort of, I really appreciate that. Cause that was definitely my experience. I moved to a 400 person town, I was 10 ? And from like a pretty diverse area to a very not diverse area. And from the moment I got there, I was plotting my escape. So I appreciate the small town romances from the people's perspective where they really like it there. But I also really, really like when authors bring the opposite.
Yeah, because it's not always that's not always everybody's experience. I mean, I lived in a small town for a long time and I liked it a lot. I mean, there's certainly lots of really great things about it, just that sort of that everybody knowing everybody. But then there's also everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody knows your business. And
Wait, so does she, because they have like traveling artisans, right? Like when my friend's little sister was traveling around as a leather worker at all the different pleasure fairs. Yep. So is she is your heroine like meeting someone who's traveling from out of town?
Or? Yes, she's I don't know how much detail I want to go into but yeah, there's definitely kind of that she realizes that like her favorite time of year is when they do the fair.
Oh, okay.
And so she sort of starts to talk to some people who are, you know, who do the traveling circuit, and she sort of wonders what it would be like to live that kind of life, and there's that sort of aspect as well.
You just did your first signing at Comic-Con with CeeLo.
Yeah, that was pretty low pressure. Yeah.
What was
that? Yeah, no
big deal. How did that come about with CeeLo and like as a debut author, was that fun? And then what was Comic-Con like for you?
Overwhelming. It was overwhelming. We had sent the book to CeeLo for a blurb and we share an agency. And so then they were very, very kind and they provided a lovely blurb. They enjoyed the book a lot. And then a couple months later, I got an email saying, you know, you're being invited to participate in their panel, their romance panel that they do every year. And I had to go hide in the bathroom and like breathe into a paper bag. I was just like, are you kidding? This is. So then when they released who was going to be on the panel, and it was a lot of extremely well-known, very well-respected by me authors and me whose debut hadn't come out yet. So I was a little intimidated, But I was just so incredibly grateful that they thought that much of my work and about, you know, to invite me to be part of it. So I went out to Comic-Con, which was probably one of the most overwhelming. I mean, you think RWA is big. Comic-Con is incredible. I had a friend come out with me for moral support, and we just would walk the floor for a couple of hours and then we'd have to go hide in the hotel room. It was just all the sound and the cacophony of 100,000 people wandering around this place, and the tent city people camped out for Hall H and all that. So,
idea of going and like seeing all the costumes and like the panels and Hall H and whatever, but I feel like I would just rock in the corner. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did it once.
It's a lot.
Like, you can manage for a couple days probably, but like, there's got to be some hiding.
Yeah, we did escape one night and went out to Old Town San Diego and had a pitcher of margaritas and some nachos and got away from all the people for a while, and that was really nice.
Yeah, I go to New York Comic Con every year, and we usually only go one day, and it's the retailer day because my husband is a retailer. I refuse to go on family day. I just bring my kids to retailer day because I cannot compete with that many strollers. But I like the idea of San Diego Comic Con just because when you leave the hustle and bustle of the floor in New York, you then exit directly into the hustle and bustle that is New York.
Whereas
you can sort of get a reprieve in San Diego.
You can, but you sort of have to work for it.
Sure.
They take over that. Just a massive
gaslight.
That whole gaslamp district, is like taken over by NBC, and like they had like this little something going on, and it was incredible. Like they had like this the tent city for like the people who were camping out, and I thought that would be something that I could probably have done 20 years ago, but no,
like, it can't be worth it. Maybe it
is. Obviously must be to some people because they do it. But
I felt lucky. I was there for one of the Game of Thrones things, and we knew someone who was working it. And so people were sitting in line for 6 hours, and she just took us in.
Oh, nice.
After hours, and then gave us a bunch of merchandise. And we're like,
I feel a little guilty. But not too guilty.
But
not too guilty.
Not enough.
They were offering tattoos. Like they had a tattoo artist there set up to tattoo you with whatever Game of Thrones thing you wanted.
For life tattoo?
Yeah.
Like a real tattoo. Wow.
A real tattoo. Wow.
Okay, well, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I did not get tattooed.
I might do it for shits and giggles. Like,
get Jon Snow's face on my ass.
It wouldn't be. See, it wouldn't be a Game of Thrones one. Like, if you offered me something I was engaged with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if it were something that if that were into, I'd probably do it.
Yeah. Like, let's do this.
Yeah, why not? It'd be a good memory of, you know.
Do you guys dress up, Melody?
For Comic-Con. I usually dress the kids up if I dress anybody up. I have not gotten my shit together enough.
Family costumes.
I want them too.
When you were talking about competing with the other strollers, I just had this vision of like Mad Max style strollers.
I mean,
so maybe consider that.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea.
I would say flames and somebody playing the guitar.
Don't worry. Frankly, that's the only way I want to roll through Comic-Con is with actual spikes coming out of my stroller.
That would be the way to do it, honestly. Definitely.
You say your kid's name, right?
Yeah, I do.
Her daughter is Valor. Like, that's her name. It's
nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So she's already like geared up for this.
Yeah, I feel like that was the energy we needed to bring into 2019. So that's what we did.
I love it. That's amazing.
Did you see anyone like interesting or famous or any like great costumes?
When my friend got there on Thursday morning, we walked to get our badges. We walked out of our hotel and almost literally bumped into George Takei. So that was kind of cool. He was very like focused. He was going where he was going. So I didn't want to like jump up and say, hey, how you doing? You know, I didn't want to be that person. But we sort of, we walked by him and you sort of do that double take, like, wait, what? And he sort of turned around to look and that is who that was. I was right. And my friend had no idea who it was. She was like, oh, that's just some Japanese businessman like coming to buy a hotel or something. And I was like, no, that's actually somebody very famous. And, mm-hmm. but she's not like a Star Trek, Star Wars type. She was like, oh, is he from Star Wars? And I'm like, no.
Wrong one.
No. Oh, speaking of Star Wars, you have a cat named General Leia, don't you?
I do. She's the best. I mean, I could spend the rest of the afternoon talking about her. We adopted her. She was 8 years old when we adopted her, and that was, she's 11 now.
Seasoned.
So she was,
she's not the princess.
So we wanted to give her a kick-ass older lady name. Yeah. So that was the first thing that we thought of, was, you know, she needs to be, and she very much lives up to it. She's just this grumpy old lady, but that demands belly rubs constantly. And she's super happy. I mean, she's a very much a people cat. We have two other cats, and she does not like them. They could die in a fire and she'd be super happy with that. But she has very, very short like legs. So they know to stay out of her striking radius, because they come close enough, she'll, you know, smack them. But so they know that her arms are like 6 inches long. So they just stay like 8 inches away from her and then stare at her, you know, and she gets all mad. It's ridiculous.
It's just battle all the time.
It is. They're ridiculous.
That's funny. Do you think, like, you said it's two books so far. Do you want to, like, maybe stay in the Renfair world?
I have a third one in mind. So it was a two-book contract, and I have my fingers crossed that I can get a third book, because I have a third book in mind, and I really want to write it. So, I mean, I'm going to write it no matter what, I think. But I really hope that this one does well, and that they would want me to write a third book for them set in this world. So I definitely have high hopes for that.
Was this the very first book you had written, or were there others before that that like ended up in a drawer somewhere?
This was not the first book that I wrote. I have a couple. You know, I have a couple that are in drawers. A couple that are actually finished and are in drawers. I actually got my agent with a different book that I was in pitch wars with in 2016.
Oh.
And so that was when I got my agent at the end of 2016, and we went on submission with that book, and it didn't really go anywhere. But I did get a really great rejection from Carrie Donovan at Berkeley. Mm. And the way that she had worded the rejection showed me that she got what I was trying to do with it, and that we were kind of on the same page as far as writing. And that made me feel really good. And I really had her in mind when I wrote this book, when I wrote Well Met, and we went out on submission with it. And I, you know, my agent told me we're going to send to her again. I said, oh, I really liked her before. I hope she likes it. And then sure enough, she did. So yay. That worked out really, really well.
Oh, it's so nice when stuff like that just works out. It's like it's meant to be. And at the time, it feels like it's not. But you just can't see how the picture is going to
exactly.
come together.
That was honestly, that was exactly it. Because while the first book was out on submission, I was actually trying to write something else. It wasn't sparking. And it just wasn't, the characters weren't doing it for me. And I thought, well, let me just play with this Renfair idea and see what I think of that. And I wrote like maybe 10 pages of it. And I was like, okay, this is really fun. And I was really writing it to just kind of cheer myself up. You know, like this is a silly story that's making me laugh while I'm writing it. And, you know, this just story about kissing and leather pants and, you know, hot guys in kilts and
God,
whatever.
It's so funny how it's falling in this rom-com moment.
And I didn't really do it. Like, I wasn't like, well, rom-coms are big right now. Let's do that. I just sort of was writing something that made me laugh. And then, like, as kind of we were getting to that, taking it on submission point, I was like, oh, rom-coms are doing really well right now. This might actually be a good thing to have done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I sort of like kind of backed into it.
That's how it works, right? Like you can't really plan to the trend.
You can't, because if you decide, you identify a trend and try to write to it, it's over by the time that you're done. So that's a silly thing to do.
Yeah, it's something we've talked about a fair bit.
Yeah. No, I could be, should I write a rom-com? And it's like, no, because I know about it. I know everyone likes a rom-com, so I better not.
We pull the questions up. I always know the first one, but
okay.
What uh-oh. Is the? Oh,
we yeah, should. Like, oh my God, what's happening?
We've reached the rapid fire.
Yes.
Portion
oh,
of the Wicked
thank
Wall
you, Melody. Oh,
great.
So we're just gonna ask you a handful of random questions.
Okay. And sure.
Long or short an answer as you want
oh,
to give.
Oh boy. Okay.
What is the strangest or most interesting object that's in your workspace?
I don't know. Does a magic 8-ball count? That's not, I don't know how odd that is, but I do have a magic 8-ball that I ask questions to a lot. And then I just, when I don't like the answers, I just keep asking until I get an answer that I like.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting thing, because you're like, oh, I know what opinion I actually have about this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because you want that yes or no answer, then you realize that, oh, you gave me the wrong answer. Okay, keep going. Keep trying it, magic 8-ball. Yeah.
I've been doing that with tarot cards.
I do have a couple of tarot decks too. And every so I've been trying to get in the habit of, before I write, like sitting down and, you know, pulling a couple of cards and really kind of doing that meditative thing, but I keep forgetting to meditate, which is probably says something about me.
It's hard. I always kind of think people who say they do it all the time are like lying because I just don't see how you
can. I don't know how they do
maybe
it.
Maybe we're just not calm people, Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know that's not the case, but it's so like unfathomable to me that I'm like, no, that's not a thing. Mm-hmm. But it is.
The only way I learned to meditate is guided meditations. Yeah. I can do that because I found a bunch of Lord of the Rings guided meditations. And so you're like walking through Rivendell. Yeah,
I can send you some. You need to send me that. That sounds awesome.
And so I was like, okay, I can get it. I can get into it. Okay. I can get into this. Is there anything you irrationally hate?
Kind of irrationally. I mean, like I hate olives and green peppers, but I don't know if that's like something that I hate. People who don't use coasters or turn signals. Mm-hmm.
Turn signals. Fuck those people.
Yeah.
How fuck dare
those,
you?
Fuck those people. I mean, I am maybe a toaster violator. A toaster violator. I'm a toaster violator.
Well, I don't. That's
really bad.
That is between you and your God. I really can't help you with that.
All right. Best villain ever?
Best villain ever. Well, you know, I mean, what comes to mind immediately is Captain Hook because he's from Once Upon a Time, and that's what my book has. My book has a very strong Captain Hook vibe to it. Oh. I don't know if you guys were at the Berkeley signing yesterday. I bring my little Captain Hook Funko Pop, and he sits on my little table.
He's got a certain flair to him.
He's got a certain flair to him, and obviously that's what's on my mind right now. So sadly, that's probably going to be my answer right now.
Okay. What scares you, not in a horrible way, like in a, spooky?
Clowns.
Okay.
No clowns for me.
No clowns.
What is the last book that kept you up reading?
You know what? I'm probably going to say Gone Girl, but I didn't like that book.
Interesting.
And honestly, I stayed up reading it because I wanted it to be over. It was by my nightstand and I kept picking it up saying, what are these fucked up people doing now? Let's get back to these assholes. And I was just glad for it to be over. I did not like that book.
Funny.
I think because I like people. When I read a book, I like to root for people. And I couldn't find a single person in that book to root for.
Mm.
So,
but you didn't put it down.
I wanted it to be over. I felt, I just wanted it to be over. And at the time, I think I was more of a completist than I am now. So I think if it were me now, if I were reading that book, I'd be like, screw this. And I wouldn't finish it.
Yeah. That makes sense. All right. If I was going to use an object to summon you with a spell, what would that object be?
Wow, that's really good. Probably a cat.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Or a puppy. I'm very much a cat and dog person. Right now we are only cats, but yeah, show me a dog. That's it. That's it.
You'll trot right over.
Yeah, oh yeah.
What's a just like stupid or bad piece of advice? It could be writing or life that someone has given you over the years that you just haven't been able to get out of your head.
I had a creative writing teacher in college that was very anti-commercial fiction and very pro-literary fiction. So there was one point that she like had us read two different passages and identify which was the quote better writing. And the one that I thought was really good was this, you know, sort of a like, I don't know, like a ladies home journal kind of piece of fiction that was a very light piece of fiction. And it was just like a nice little story. And I remember really liking it and saying, this was really good. Mm-hmm. And she was like, no, that's wrong. You're like, no, this is, you know, that's not important writing. And I was like,
people like that shouldn't be teaching writing.
Yeah, she
can't say right and wrong with writing.
She was a very much a literary kind of person. And so, and I remember kind of just kind of saying, well, fuck you, I'm going to write commercial stuff then because this is what makes me happy.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely. Good for you.
Yeah. I had an attitude.
As you should, like defend your voice.
Yeah, pretty much. Because I think that was what it was I really kind of identified with that particular piece of writing. I don't even remember what it was, but it was like, yeah, this is the kind of voice I like. This is the kind of stuff I like to read. Mm-hmm. And so why is it bad, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was something that really, I don't say it stuck with me, but it stuck with me like in a fuck you kind of way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to like a, you know, I should get this out of my head. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ask the next one again because this one requires explanation and my letters won't make sense to you. Okay, so we used to do fuck, marry, kill with famous men.
Oh, okay.
And they all disappointed us over and over again, so now we're done with men.
Because
men are canceled.
2019. They're canceled.
Okay, fair enough.
We're not going to kill women because it's 2019 and we're just not going to do that.
Okay,
so we do fuck, marry, burn down the patriarchy. So you will go on a patriarchy burning spree with one of these women.
Okay.
Okay, and your options are Beyonce, Lucy Liu, and Tessa Thompson.
Oh, God. Wow. I think Lucy Liu and I would burn down the patriarchy. She's, yeah. Fuck Tessa Thompson, marry Beyonce.
Good answer.
I mean, who wouldn't want to marry Beyonce?
Yeah.
I dig it. All right. What movie would you watch every day?
Every day. Okay, right now, I think my answer is probably The Greatest Showman.
Ooh.
It's just a fun movie. My husband and I saw that in the theater when it came out. We did a double bill on Christmas Day of The Last Jedi and The Greatest Showman, which were pretty opposite movies. But it was a really fun day at the movies. And we both just fell in love with it. We're both very into, like, you know, the old school movie musicals, like, you know, Singing in the Rain and, like, old, you know, Fred and Ginger movies. And it really reminded us of that kind of just spectacle kind of thing. And it's just a fun, and then the music is so fun.
Oh,
so
man.
It's a good movie to kind of have out in the background.
I'm going to have to watch that on the way home. On the plane.
Yeah, that anthem will make me go from zero to Steel Magnolias crying in no time
flat. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know, plot-wise, maybe not so much, but for the whole film, but just the music is so great, and it's such a beautiful spectacle of a movie that, yeah, I could have that on every day, no problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. No.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. It's so good.
And I have a whole flight home with no children on the plane with me. I never get to watch movies on the plane. What Hogwarts house would you be in is the final question.
Pottermore says that I'm in Gryffindor, so that's where I identify. But I really think I have Hufflepuff leanings.
Mm.
I really do.
What are we, Gryffindor?
Gryffindor with Hufflepuff rising?
Yes, there
as
we
I
go.
Would say.
There we go. I like that. Yeah, that's me.
Perfect. So the book is Well Met, and if people want to follow you online, where can they do that?
My website is www.jendeluca.com. I am on Twitter. This is a slightly complicated, and this is a bad idea of mine, but
I wanted to ask you about that.
I just kind of didn't. I don't know why I did this to myself, but I hyphenetically spell out my initials, so it's @JAYDEE_ELL. So it's JDL.
I was like, why is it JD? I did not.
Yeah,
connect the
I
initials.
Don't know why I did that. I did that like back in 2015 or something. And wow, that was probably not a good idea.
But I think if you just search Jen DeLuca,
you search Jen DeLuca, it comes up. And I'm on Instagram, is I think Jen DeLuca Writes. And then I think Facebook for some reason is Jen DeLuca Books instead. But again, you can search for me and I'm there. So.
And Melody has been underutilized, but Melody, where can we find the Heaving Bosoms?
Well, both bosoms can be found. Instagram is @HeavingBosoms. Twitter is @Heaving_Bosoms. And Facebook is the Heaving Bosoms Geriatric Friendship Cult, our closed Facebook group that is so happy. It's so happy in there. And then our website is HeavingBosomsPodcast.com. And that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Jen.
Thank
for
you
taking
so
the time.
Much.
Good
this
luck
so fun.
With your debut.
Thank you.